Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Yeah, let's do this thing. Welcome in, WGN listeners. Good evening. The voice you're hearing right now is Michael Heidemann. You might have heard me on the Steve Cochran Morning Show, maybe on the music podcast I host called Sound Sessions, which can be found on WGN Plus and all your favorite streaming sites. Or maybe you've seen me play music around Chicago. Either way, I am so, so delighted to carry you through the night as your host on the greatest station in the world, WGN Radio. You know, I'll tell you, I'm just like you. I've been listening to this radio station for years on car rides with my mom, Celeste, or my dad, Michael, and my grandpa, Donald, as we drove through McHenry County. You know, I just was a lover of all things radio growing up. Going to shows around the city, getting into trouble, or just quiet moments at home, radio was always there with me. And now after years of learning about Chicago, from the music scene, traveling to South by Southwest as a mentor, and the music conferences I would go to, traveling as a journalist to the 2019 Grammy Awards, and covering nearly every single music festival in Chicago, I think this passion has really come to fruition. And that's what I'm bringing to the airwaves tonight. And that's just going to be a little of what you're going to hear tonight on WGN. But I can't do it without my amazing, loyal team surrounding me of my producer, Ashley Byhun. What's going on, Ashley?
Woohoo! I'm excited to work with you because we've worked together as producers, like on the same team, mm-hmm. same side of the glass. This time it's a little reversed where you're on the other side of the glass, so it's going to be really fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is a blast, and it's cool to, you know, with such production chops, you kind of learn the inner workings of a show, so it's going to be cool to work alongside you as well. And you have a little segment at the end of the show, correct?
Yes, I do. I'm excited. I'm going to give you guys some fun music news going on, what the happenings are, and I do have some do's and don'ts for festivals, so I think it should be a fun time.
This is going to be great. So yeah, get your calls in, 312-981-7200. That's the same number for the text line. We're going to be rolling calls all night and talking about the man, the rolling calls himself, the music maestro, Roger Badish in the news. What's going on, Roger?
Music maestro? My gosh, if you gave me a shopping bag, I couldn't hold a note. Good Lord.
Wait a minute. If any listeners recall from the other night with John Hansen,
oh,
I remember campfires, you had the voice of an angel.
Well, I don't know if Neil Diamond is an angel, but that's where my voice was. I was doing a very gravelly fourth-hand version of Neil Diamond. Mm-hmm. I like how you guys said, you start strumming the old guitar, which is just beautiful.
Thanks.
And you guys, it was Sweet Caroline, because mm-hmm. we were around the campfire. We had to do a campfire song.
Of course.
And you guys said, okay, hey, Raj Khan, you know, everybody join in. And I think we got through Where We at the beginning of the song, mm-hmm. and you guys completely stopped singing, and I just kept going. And I thank you for that.
And I thank you for the magic of digital radio recording, because everyone can hear that right now on WGN Radio.
They can.
Roger singing. And thanks to John Hansen, we had a great time doing the campfire.
It was fun, yeah.
Sadly, no campfire tonight unless we get one started, unless John Hansen calls in. I think he might be in Hayward, actually.
I think he is. He's in Wisconsin on a, I think it's a 10-day vacation,
mm-hmm.
and doing some fishing and some boating and some campfiring and everything else that goes along with that. So God bless him up there. Maybe he's listening to us. Maybe.
Doubtful. Doubtful.
He does tend to kind of cut himself off from the world
yes,
when he does his camping, but But
he turns off his phone. You know, you got to do that when you're catching those muskies up in Wisconsin.
That's true. That maybe he'll catch some and bring them back, and we can cook them up on the campfire next time he's around.
Now that sounds like a great plan, Roger. Yeah. See, that's why I'm glad you're sitting in the news seat. Nothing but good ideas. Well, we're gonna have a great time tonight, and I'm so looking forward to spending the evening with all of y'all here on Friday night. In Chicago, there's nothing better in the entire city than being right here, right now. So you made a good choice. But let's look at the rundown real quick of what we have coming on tonight. At the next break, we're going to take a quick break after I go through this, and we're going to come back with Lala versus Woodstock, the ultimate challenge. We're going to take a look at the 1960s Woodstock lineup compared to what we have going on today and see how they compare, how they contrast. Roger, I think you played at the Woodstock in the 1960s. Is that correct?
I was the roadie for every act.
Every act.
Every act. Well, they wouldn't let me off stage. They kept calling me back. The audience was crazy. I'm telling you.
Well, you had long hair back then, and you ate granola.
We ate something. I'm not sure what it was, but it was another time.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. So we're going to be diving into that at 11:30. We got Forbes music journalist Jim Ryan talking about the recent Garth Brooks dive tour, which is happening throughout the country. And he played a Chicago bar, which I don't know if I'd consider Joe's on Weed Street to be a very much of a dive bar. I mean, the place has a $10,000 plus sound system, one of the premier country music spots in the entire city. But you know what? He's Garth Brooks. For what it was worth, it was pretty awesome. Then we got Aaron from Bill's Bar and Burger talking about the power of the open mic. So if you have an open mic experience, if you're an open micer yourself, please call in 312-981-7200. Then the ultimate music journalist, director, just a genuine music lover. The director Cameron Crowe is going to be joining us talking about his new doc on David Crosby, Remember My Name. And let me tell you, Cameron Crowe, an amazing, amazing individual, the way he speaks so eloquently about music. I mean, for God's sakes, the guy started as a Rolling Stone music journalist when he was about 13, 14, 15, 16 years old. Lester Bangs was his buddy, and a lot of that is dictated and shown in the music. The movie Almost Famous, and we kind of dive into that and his connection with David Crosby as well. So if you have any memories about David Crosby, the Birds, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, give us a call. We'd love to hear those as well. And then like we mentioned before, Ashley is going to take us through the news when we open up the famous music vault. But right now, let's take a quick short break. We're going to come back with all that and more here on WGN Radio.
Walked in the room like you walked out a movie.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to WGN Radio. This is your host, Michael Heidemann. That amazing voice you're hearing right now is the one and only Josie Dunn, Chicago native who is actually blowing up across the country. She's going on a country tour. Is that what we call it nowadays? A national tour to promote her new songs, and that's the song Ooh La La. So we're excited. We're actually going to be speaking to her on Monday on the Sound Sessions podcast, which you can find on WGN Radio. And she's just doing amazing things. It just shows you, you know, you can come from the suburbs of Chicago and you can hit it big. She's actually playing a few Lollapalooza after shows. And it just comes from just the hard work that you put into writing and perfecting your music. And that's the beautiful thing about music, and that's kind of what we're going to dive into right now. There's a big festival coming up, Ashley. I don't know if you noticed it. There's a lot of road closures going on right now in Chicago, a lot of things happening within the city. You can feel the energy almost, and that's Lollapalooza. Have you ever been to Lollapalooza before?
I have, and I love it. I love all music festivals. It really is an experience, and it's just such a fun time, especially if you go with the right group of people. You always just have a blast. You're listening to live music, which is always awesome, even if it's no one you've heard of before or a new band that you haven't gotten a chance to listen to. It's always so much fun. So I have gone, but I'm not going to this one, and I'm bummed.
What? Why not?
I don't know. It's just it's not lining up well with my schedule this year, so it kind of stinks. Even though it spans over, what is it, 3 days, right?
It's 4 days, actually.
Four days, so I have another option.
They need their money in the bank.
Yeah.
It's 4 days. It increased over just a couple of years ago that it increased to 4 days. Ariana Grande, Childish Gambino, 21 Pilots, The Strokes, Tame Impala, Flume, The Chainsmokers, Casey Musgraves, Lil Wayne. These are some of the biggest names in music right now, and they all converge in Chicago over the next 4 days. Did you see any favorites that you're kind of upset about missing?
I want to see Ariana Grande. I think she would be awesome. She
yeah.
has such a sassy attitude, and I think that is so fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of bummed that I have to miss her, because I think she's so fun, and I love all of her music. It's, you know, kind of women empowering and super fun like that. So I wish I got to see her. But, you know, she is still big and making big music, so I'm sure she'll be back.
Yeah, she'll be back. I mean, she's Ariana Grande. I think she's going to be back in the city of Chicago. I hope so, at least. There's so many great artists, and it's funny because it spans everything from amazing Christian artist Lauren Daigle to Shaquille O'Neal, who's going to be doing a DJ set there as DJ Diesel. Did you know that?
I did not know he was doing a set, but I did see there was a viral video trending of him dancing in the front row at an EDM concert.
Yeah, I've seen that. The guy is, what, 7'1"?
Yeah. And he's in the front row. How rude.
Did you see him mosh pitting as well during it, too?
Like, oh, my gosh.
If you haven't seen that, you can check it out online. Just search Shaq at an EDM concert. You're going to find it. But, you know, there's a lot of things that come from creating a great music festival. And we're going to dive right back into the original music festival, Woodstock, which happened in New York in 1969. And it's interesting to look back at the Woodstock Music Festival because there was so much going on. And actually, I wanted to bring up, since we're talking festivals, our text and caller question. I wanted to know, what would be your dream lineup for a music festival? Who would you want to see? It could be one artist. It could be three artists. Just text in 312-981-7200. Give us a call, and we'll talk about the music that you love and would be your perfect set list. But it's interesting to look at Woodstock's lineup from 1969 because it happened over 3 days, August 15th, 16th, 17th, oh, and 18th. It was 4 days. It was like the original Lala almost.
There you go.
But here's why I shortchanged it a little bit. As opposed to Lollapalooza, which is 4 days and has, I think, it's looking, what is this, 50-plus bands?
Yeah, on all days.
Yeah, on all days. I think there was about 10 bands a day for Woodstock, and then on the last day was just 3 days. Roger, do you remember when Woodstock was going on? How old were you back then? Three?
1969. Mm-hmm. I was a senior in high school.
Oh, wow. Did you end up going to New York and doing
the
caravan?
No, did not. I was working,
okay,
making my millions early. But we all heard about it. We all knew about it. I know that a lot of my classmates did make the trip out there. It was the big difference is if you're comparing how many bands played each day and mm-hmm. all this other stuff, Woodstock was one stage.
That's right. That's right.
And Lollapalooza has how many stages?
Oh, at least, I'm going to say at least seven, because there are so many, and it spans almost a mile in length at Grant Park.
Yeah, so the field, Yasgur's Farm in New York, where Woodstock was held, the majority of that land, which was huge, if you've ever seen the documentary, which is basically a film of the concert, Woodstock, you should see it. There's a long version, there's the full version, then there's an edited version. Watch the long version. You will see tons of film of the crowds and the vastness of the area, and it would dwarf what Lollapalooza is right now,
mm-hmm.
because you just had the one stage playing to everybody. And people got there not through public transportation. People walked. They took buses, VW buses, which back in the day were hippie vans, hippie buses is what they were called. You hiked. You walked. However you could get there, you got to Woodstock, mm-hmm. and you sat in the rain, you sat in the heat, you sat, there were very little bathroom facilities, not like they have now at Lollapalooza, which it's an industry now.
Yeah.
And you literally were there for the experience, not necessarily the music, even though that's all there was. There was no food. Whatever food that you had, you brought it.
Well, wasn't Wavy Gravy cited as starting the granola revolution? That's how they were fed. He brought his own food
at the
time.
Well, he brought his own food, but of course, a lot of it was spiked with mind-altering materials. There was no concession. Let's put it that way. There was no concession like you have now. Mm-hmm. Nobody's selling bottles of water for $100 a piece. You know,
what kind of water are you drinking, Roger? $100 a piece? That's some good water right there.
Well, I'm making a profit.
Let's think. We got a text message of their favorite bands that they would want to see. Tashiki Trucks Band, Samantha Fish, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and Joe Bonamassa.
Tedeschi Trucks.
Tedeschi Trucks.
I think it's Tedeschi Trucks.
And that's from the 605. Thanks for texting in. It's awesome. Yeah. You know, if there's any listeners out there who've been to Woodstock, because I'm sure we have a couple
who
have made the venture out there, I'd love to hear those stories, because I think that it's so awesome to make that travel for music. In fact, most of my time that I spend traveling nowadays is solely focused on going to shows, learning more about music, because it's the great communicator, and there is mm-hmm. nothing more communicative than the Woodstock Music Festival. I mean, listen to some of these bands. Day one, Sweetwater, Ravi Shankar, Arlo Guthrie, Joan Baez. Day two, check this out, Roger.
Mm-hmm.
Santana, mm-hmm. Canned Heat, Grateful Dead, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Janis Joplin, Sly and the Family Stone, The Who, Jefferson Airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Day three, Joe Crocker, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. Man, and day four, this little indie artist, I thought he was okay at guitar. Jimi Hendrix, mm-hmm. ever heard of him? I mean, now that is so much more quality over quantity as far as Lollapalooza
goes. And I'll tell you, you listed some big names, but you left out some that being there in 69 and 70 and 71, because some of these musicians, actually Jimi Hendrix really, when you open for the Monkees, which is what Jimi Hendrix had to do,
mm-hmm.
when you open for the Monkees and then you play at Woodstock and you are suddenly this superstar, this blazing light of music,
mm-hmm.
that was his moment. And, you know, his popularity grew 1,000-fold after that. He never opened for anyone anymore. Mm-hmm. He was the main act. But you left out some names, if I may. Richie Havens. If you've never heard him open mm-hmm. up the festival with Here Comes the Sun, and the other music that he produced, it's just amazing. So he opened up the festival.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie was a big star. That was on day one. John Sebastian was in a number of bands before he went out on his own. Country Joe McDonald, notorious for...
Wait, I think he's still playing, actually. He's at Lala. He's on day
really?
Four, yeah.
This guy, if you look at the film of Woodstock, this guy's expletive deleted comments in some of his songs, really got the audience, you know, going. There are so many more that, you know, are on this list. Paul Butterfield Blues Band actually was in the mid-60s.
Mm.
And
does this take you back, Raj?
What are we listening to?
This music? This is Richie.
Oh, please, don't stop this song.
Campfire is coming back, ladies and gentlemen.
You got to listen. Have you ever heard that? You got to listen to this.
Let's take a quick listen.
All right.
You know, we had Jimmy Buffett in the studio the other day with Mac McAnally. And this is a lot, this reminds me of Mac McAnally's style of playing guitar. It's just a lot of great open strings.
He's all by himself sitting on a chair on that stage.
Wow.
Yeah. This is, and it was this long open.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm trying to see
you
how
you hit in the post, Roger? Is that what you're trying to do here?
I'm trying to hear. Turn it up. Again, this is all him.
You can hear very faintly, that's Roger whistling in the back.
That was. I was there. I told you. Brody. It's been a long, long, long winter. Amazing guitarist. Amazing vocalist. Great performance.
You know, they have a great, great video of this on the dock that I've seen before. And
you
just,
have.
You're exactly right. Just this kind of vibe and just opening the day with the sun coming out and you seeing that the throngs of people like going through the fences and just leaving their cars on the street. That's what music's all about. And it's just creating a community.
And there were no fences. Now, Lala, we're blocking off streets. We've got fencing
all
up all the way. You got to go through and show your passes and tickets. There was no tickets.
Yeah.
You just went to the festival. It was fantastic.
It was fantastic. It's a beautiful thing. Aaron and Wheaton, by the way, you are hilarious. You just sent us a picture of a campfire and through text. And you must have been listening to the show last week or
yeah,
so, because that's awesome.
Ago, yeah,
nothing
fun.
Better than a good old campfire.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break before the news, and we're going to dive right back into this. Text in your memories. Who has been to Woodstock? I think we'll give a prize out if somebody has been to Woodstock and shares a great story about that. So call us 312-981-7200. More memories, more great music here on WGN Radio. See, Raj, this is my favorite band from Woodstock. Can you name that tune?
Mahavishnu. Hale, Hale.
Hey, Ashley, I think this is your favorite too. Who is this guy?
Ravi Shankar. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, Ravi.
The old Ravi Shankar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this would be on the next level if you're at Woodstock and you're eating some of that fancy granola Roger was talking about, listening to some Ravi Shankar in midday summer heat in New York. Man.
Now, again, Shankar was popular mainly through his introduction to the Beatles several years before.
Mm-hmm.
So his stuff was known. He's still around. He's still playing. His daughter composes and plays. And if anyone wants to see a more recent performance of him and his daughter, the concert for George, the huge musical event that was put on to honor the life of George Harrison after he passed away, it's on at on-demand channels. It's on DVD. The first half, pretty much the first half of the concert, is all Ravi Shankar and his daughter.
Man,
it's beautiful, just beautiful.
And if you want to see Roger Badish's Ravi Shankar back tattoo, check out his Instagram. He's the biggest Ravi Shankar fan in the last 20 years.
It glows, and it changes depending on what side you look at. I'm just saying.
We're having a great time here on WGN Radio, but right now we got to go to the Ravi Shankar number one fan club member, Roger Badish. Chicago Stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Radio. Smart speaker users, say play WGN Radio on TuneIn, and the news is sponsored by Joint Relief Institute, and here is Roger Badish at 11:02. Welcome back to WGN's Nightside. This is your host, Mike Heidemann. And that beautiful, beautiful sound you're hearing is Ryan Pollock's new song, Friends. He just put out a brand new EP, and yes, he's from Chicago as well. Let's take a quick listen to the song.
My friends are out in the world again. And I'm home writing songs cause I envy them. I should know by now that I can't.
great songwriter Ryan is. He's a student at Columbia College, and you know, just this album and this song, it just shows what you can do in the midst of your bedroom with your computer and your guitar. It's a good time we live in if you're going to create music. But before we jumped up to the news break, we were talking about the good time spent at Woodstock's music festival back in the 60s. Got a bunch of great text messages. Let me rifle through a few of these. From the 708, I'm a few years younger than Roger. I remember Woodstock being the largest gathering of counterculture that existed in America during that time. Anti-institution, anti-war, open sex, lots of drugs, but they think that the music was the most important part because you were getting together with like-minded people, and that was the biggest draw, and I can't agree with you more. I mean, granted, I wasn't around for a few years until the 1980s, but if I could have been back, I would have loved to experience Woodstock, you know, just in the midst of all of that turmoil going on with America, just seeing that was just, it would be an amazing experience. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. We've got Bill from Chicago. What's going on? What's up, Bill?
Yeah, Roger probably remembers this. Remember when Mayor Byrne had the Chicago Fest on Navy Pier? It used to cost you $5 to get on, and they had all the big name shows like Lil Anthony, the Imperials, Andy Gibb, the Bee Gees. I remember with the year Andy Gibb, the Bee Gees performed, it was so crowded, everybody was standing. You couldn't have fell down if you fainted.
Well, do you remember the year that Frank Sinatra performed there?
Oh, yeah, the same thing, right? Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. You couldn't even move. You just, the main stage was at the front.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
I mean, you just stood there, and you couldn't have fell over if you fainted.
Yeah, Michael.
And nobody worried about pickpockets or no trouble. We didn't make trouble or nothing like that. You know, nobody worried about it, you know.
Yeah, Michael might be able to understand this, but the Navy Pier back then was not what you know now.
I can imagine.
Back then was pretty much a dilapidated
building. It had nothing there except they put in food.
Right.
During the
a lot of food
fest.
Vendors.
They also had vendors that sold all kinds of jewelry.
Sure.
And souvenirs and all kinds of stuff like that too.
Right.
But no, there was no Ferris wheel or
no boat
rides or anything like that. There was none of that stuff.
And it was on the south end of the pier because the rest of the pier pretty much was too dilapidated to use. It hadn't been remodeled yet, and the stage was in front of where the pier building is. Like when you go into all the shops in there now, Michael, that's where the stage was in the front, where the mall area is. And it was amazing. She pulled in everything. I was lucky. I was working at another radio station, like the second year that they had the fest there at the pier. And then the following year, I was actually working for Jane Byrne. So I was in charge of putting out publicity for the year that Frank Sinatra, I think Blood, Sweat, and Tears, played the stage.
Wow.
Right. Yeah,
show.
Yeah.
It was
amazing.
It was a big thing, and all the big-name country stars were there,
mm-hmm.
and the comedians, I can't think of his name now, though. Oh, he was a prominent black comedian. I can't think of his name now, but they were actually performed. I think they performed on barges set along the pier because they had bleachers on the pier. You could sit and watch them.
Yeah.
And they were on these barges on the sitting there on the lake.
When you say it was crowded because the space,
crowded. Talk about crowd. I mean,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, you could not fit the people who were on the pier.
You just walked along. If you wanted to stop, you figured out some way to stop or got out of the way so that people could find you and stop, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, thank you so much for the call. That's such a cool memory about Chicago, you know, seeing what it was like back in the day when you could really experience it firsthand. And I love the stories of old Chicago and how they used to create this music atmosphere, because there was Chicago Stadium back in the day, mm-hmm. that a lot of people saw perform at, and now I'm hearing
the amphitheater.
Now I'm hearing Bill was partying it up at Navy Pier back in the day.
Yeah.
And now you see all these bands, and it's interesting to think that the transition of music, how it went from rock music and you know, comedy tying together, and now at Navy Pier, all you see is, you know, the EDM artists, the electronic dance music artists, and it's just a party scene, and I get it, but you know, it's just,
you want a little more variety?
I want a little bit more variety,
yeah,
is what I want.
Yeah.
I want the Anti-M pretzel, and I want the rock, and I want, you know, the Frank Sinatra bands, too. So thank you so much
That would be
for
a perfect
me.
Night.
It would. Yeah, so we got a few more text messages rolling through as well. We got from the 847. They give a little piece of Shankar tip and a Shankar fact. The Monkees used to use music like Robbie Shankar's background music in their episodes, I suppose.
Yeah, they did.
They
embraced that.
Yeah. See, the Monkees weren't all too bad.
No.
They gave Jimi Hendrix their start, right?
Well, they didn't give him the start. Hendrix actually didn't really get known until he went over to Europe first. He was nothing here. He had to go to Europe in order to get his start, and then he came back here, opened for the Monkees, and then did Woodstock, and then boom. Wow. The rest is history.
Man, the rest is history, and we're going to keep continuing these amazing stories throughout the night. So get your calls in, 312-981-7200. Same on the text line. We want to see what would be your ultimate concert experience. Who would you want to see perform? We had Bill talking about that amazing experience he had at Navy Pier, but I want to hear from some more listeners and see, you know, what's your aspect on music? Do you want to see Frank Sinatra back on stage if you could? I mean, this is purely a hypothetical. So.
Well, my ultimate.
Yes, Roger.
Would
what's
be.
Yours?
And again, for rock music, okay?
Yeah.
My ultimate? Beatles, Stones, Who?
Wow.
Boom.
But then who's headlining that show?
Doesn't matter who's headlining. whoever needs to get out of town first will play first.
Mm-hmm. And who's opening? I mean, that's the most important. Who are people crowding, like going in to see when they're just like grabbing a beer?
So here's what you do. So it's a three-part stage. It wraps around the audience. And each band is on at the same time. And they're all playing with each other's songs.
Okay.
One band plays once, Stones play Satisfaction, Beatles play Eleanor Rigby.
Theater in the Round.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they have a show like that. I think it's called with Jules Holland.
It's on
a music station.
Yeah.
And they just rotate the bands and they perform on air. Ashley, what about
cool.
you? What's your ultimate concert experience?
I was thinking about it, and I like a lot of old school bands, and I was so close. I got like two of them in a row, and I almost went to this concert. It was REO Speedwagon and Chicago. They came here last summer, and I almost went, but I had to work, and I was new here, so I didn't want to take off, so I had to give up those tickets. But it would be those two and probably the Beatles. That would be unbelievable to see the original, the whole
shebang. Oh, my gosh.
Right when that was going on.
You know what the crazy thing about the Beatles is? They did all of that before they were 30 years old.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's like how... You were talking about Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, and I don't remember who wrote Lucky Man, but he wrote that when he was 9 years old or 8 years old or something crazy like that. It's just like, I don't even know what I was doing when I was that young, and there's these people that are making this amazing music, and it's insane. I don't understand it.
You know,
I wish I was that talented.
When you're born with that kind of musical spirit, you just need to let it loose. Like, there's no way that David Crosby, and we're going to be speaking to Cameron Crowe about his new movie, his new doc with him later, but there's no way that David Crosby, you know, maybe in a parallel universe, could have been like a carpenter or, you know, an electrician. But there's, when you're built with that kind of music in your body, I think that you need to express it. We got a few more text messages before we go to break from the 630. My ultimate concert experience would be Slipknot. Hey, you know, they are the pioneers of that great double bass sound. One of the greatest drummers in the world is in the band Slipknot. So much love to them. From the 804... They just attended the Kiss the Sky Jimi Hendrix experience at Three Oaks in Michigan. That would be pretty awesome. I mean, the music still lives on, and that's the cool thing about these music festivals and getting to live in a city like Chicago, where we have just everything that we want at our fingertips. And we're about to dive in to a great conversation with Jim Ryan, who is a Forbes music journalist. He dove into what's going on with Lollapalooza, what's happening here in Chicago, some of the other music festivals as well. And we're going to get him on right after this break here on WGN. This is your host, Mike Heidemann. Welcome back to WGN's Nightside. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, and I'm so, so delighted to be spending your evening with you here on Friday night in the beautiful city of Chicago on WGN Radio. We were talking about memories of great concerts of the past, Lollapalooza happening this upcoming 2 weeks. It's going to be pretty, it's here faster than you know it. We were talking about Woodstock, and we had some great text messages rolling through about stories and memories that they shared from our listeners. From the 406, they drove to Seattle to see Rush. And I'm guessing this, I'm not sure where the 406 is from, but to see Rush, I would do that too.
That would be unbelievable.
One of the most legendary bands there are. And then from the 414, Wes Alice here. I agree with you about the variety of music. And they're talking about another music festival that's very popular here in the Midwest, Summerfest, which had its attendance go down this year. And the main complaint was that there was no variety. Are you kidding me? If anybody out there, WGN listeners, if you've been to Summerfest, I feel like that's, isn't it the world's largest music festival in the first place? I think that they have a lot of variety, but I wonder what the story is going on with that. Maybe we should ask music journalist Jim Ryan from Forbes. What's going on, Jim?
Not too much, Mike. Thanks for having me.
There we go. I'll put
Thank you for having me, sir. It's always a blast to be here on WGN.
So late at night?
This is early for me. I'm always on with Nick, so this is...
This is about the time that you and I usually hang out with when we meet each other at concerts.
that's where our paths usually cross, yes.
So Jim is he's an amazing journalist, writes for Forbes. Before that, he was covering shows all over the place. And he put out this new article covering Pitchfork, which actually was on the top of some of the largest news outlets in the world. How was Pitchfork this year, Jim?
I loved it. I mean, you talk about variety with Summerfest. I mean, Pitchfork's lineup, I don't even know who they're trying to aim at because it's so all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You had Mavis Staples, and then you had Charlie XCX. So you go from, you know, Mavis marching with Martin Luther King and fighting for civil rights to Charlie XCX. And then you have the Isley Brothers. I mean, it was, to say that that line was all over the place would be a vast understatement, but in a really, really good way. So
yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, and the cool thing is they do that in Union Park here in Chicago. And if you're from out of town, Union Park is not the biggest park when you're at a music festival. So it's a lot of tight quarters. So you're seeing Mavis Staples, and then maybe a few hundred feet away, you're seeing a band like Low, who is just this ethereal metal kind of rock band, which makes no sense as far as...
Right.
But you know what? It, as you said, it brings all these people together. And that was the beautiful thing about Woodstock, because above everything, it was just communicating with music and finding your common man. So maybe Pitchfork is doing the right thing.
Yeah, there was a lot of pop this year. You had Haim, you had Charlie XCX, and you had Robin closing things out Sunday night. And I hope it's putting somebody like Mavis Staples or the Isley Brothers or some of these acts, I hope it's putting it on the radar maybe of younger fans who wouldn't necessarily be familiar with them outside the confines of a festival like that, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
That's a good point, because I never thought I would get the experience to see Mavis Staples. I've heard about her legend for years and years and years, and getting to see her in my backyard in Chicago and hearing that gravelly Mavis Staples voice, that was quite the experience.
We're so lucky. I think we take for granted as Chicagoans the fact that we have somebody like Mavis Staples out there at 80 years old singing and speaking on our behalf. That's a great thing.
Yeah, and you know, not only Mavis Staples, I think that Peter Frampton is coming to the Chicagoland area
this
as
weekend,
well.
This
weekend, and he's going through like a degenerative muscle issue where he's never going to tour again because he can't play guitar anymore or something like that.
That's some of these older guys. It's Huey Lewis has some weird thing too with his hearing.
That's right.
He can't tour. He can barely do anything really musically, which for someone who's done it for their entire life is a kind of a wild thing. I didn't know Frampton had that going on. Wow.
Yeah. So it's an interesting time that Frampton, Huey Lewis, all these bands are getting so, you know, dated and old, yet the Rolling Stones continue strong
are still out there.
And can rock for three hours at a time. It's crazy to think about that.
Yeah, I mean, after the apocalypse, there will be cockroaches and Keith Richards. That's how that's shaping up.
You know, I just interviewed this great, great band called The Revivalists, who are coming to Chicago's Lollapalooza, and they were talking about their experience.
They
with
just
the
opened,
Stones,
right?
Open for the Rolling Stones out in Jacksonville, Florida, and the fact that you're a rock band from the South, from New Orleans, and you get to open up for the Rolling Stones, a band you've been listening to since you were 5 years old. That's truly incredible because who would have thought, you know, when you're 33 years old, that they'd even still be around.
When the Stones came through in 2015, I remember being petrified when I didn't go to see the stops at United Center, the three nights, that might be it. So to have that opportunity in 2019 it's really amazing, isn't it? I mean, Charlie Watts is 78 years old. That's, you know, God willing, he's back in two or three years and they're doing this again. But, I mean, you certainly can't assume that. So it certainly felt to those two shows at Soldier Field like...
Yeah.
You know,
it's
a
fun.
Momentous thing.
You mentioned that. This is another great text message question, or maybe a call-in question we can pose before the break. There's a lot of great artists that are starting to fall by the wayside. I know that when Lemmy came from Motorhead to Riot Fest, I did not think that he was going to pass away the next year.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was one surprising. Of his final shows. I think he only did four or five shows literally after Riot Fest. So, I mean, yeah, you never know.
The man was built on cigarettes and whiskey. I thought he was going to last forever. And so it was just so heartbreaking to see that. But I want to know, who are your artists that are your need-to-see artists before they pass away? I have a few that I'm going to tease out there, and I'll save it for the after the break. But I want to know, who is the artist you need to see before they die? So give us a call, 312-981-7200. Hopefully that wasn't too morbid. but I want to know. I'm thinking along the lines of, you know, your Mick Jaggers, sure. Your Keith Richards.
The bucket list.
The bucket list. There we go. The bucket list artist. That's a little bit more friendly. Radio friendly, I suppose. But let's take a quick break. We'll be back here on WGN Radio. This is Mike Heidemann for The Night Side. Now we're talking, Ashley. This is the band Pegboy with the song Strong Reaction. This is good. This is a good choice. Where'd you find these guys, Ashley?
This is actually my uncle's band, and they were, I don't want to say really big, but they were bigger in Chicago back in the 90s. So Pete Zimmerman actually is a fan of their music, which I found through conversation, which I think is awesome. But yeah, they're still playing music. They're still around and they still rock. So
My gosh. Pegboy live on WGN Radio. We have another fan of Pegboy. It's the Pegboy himself, Jim Ryan, Forbes journalist. He writes for all things music, all things concerts. He's the man about town. What's going on, Jim? Good to see you again.
Good to be here. Thanks so much for having me. And Pegboy, I've seen at Riot Fest, I believe.
Really?
Always fun, yeah.
Oh, so they're really well known. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
John Haggerty from, I can't think of it, Something Pistols. He's the lead guitarist for the band.
Man.
There you go.
I'll figure it out.
Jeez. Well, that's the cool thing about Chicago. We have such a great connection to music, and there's so many artists that you're like, oh, you know, I guess I did know that guy. He's in that band, and so. And we were talking about the great music artists that we have seen in Chicago, have in Chicago, or we'd want to see one day. We were talking about best bucket list bands, the bands that you need to see, the bands or artists you need to see before they kick the bucket. I teased out mine. I'm going to go to Jim Ryan first, though, and I'm going to see who do you need to see before they kick the bucket?
I got to put some thought into this. The concert bucket list. I'm excited to see the Strokes at Lollapalooza. I've never seen the Strokes.
Yeah.
I had a good month. I knocked several in a row off my concert bucket list. I caught The Who in Grand Rapids and again in Tinley Park.
Okay.
I caught McCartney in Fort Wayne.
Wow.
Did two nights of the Stones.
You know what? You just hit the Roger Badish trifecta of the bands that he wanted to put on his festival list. The Stones, The Who, and The Beatles. All in 1 month?
It was 1 month. The Who launched their North American Symphonic Tour, 55-piece orchestra in Grand Rapids, and then hit Tinley.
Show-offs.
And they'll be back in... they'll be back at Alpine Valley in September.
That's incredible.
Yeah. McCartney was in Fort Wayne and then the Stones for two nights. So and all in about a month. And then Garth Brooks as well. So a hell of a month, Mike.
Okay, so that is pretty incredible, the fact that you got to see all those artists. And I kind of pitched in the beginning of the show that we'd be talking a little bit about Garth Brooks. That was an incredible show. We're talking about Garth Brooks, who's going on his dive bar tour. He's playing all over the country at these quote-unquote dive bars. He played at Joe's on Weed here in Chicago, and I think that he played a 60,000-seat stadium with Blake Shelton for his next dive bar.
Yeah.
I it's not really staying true to the dive bar essence, but it was incredible to see an artist like Garth Brooks, who, you know, I'm not a really big country fan, to be honest. At least I wasn't back in the day. I thought I was going to be a punk rocker through and through. Bands like, you know, Naked Ray Gun, the old classics, Lagwagon, you know, Rancid, all those bands that you grew up listening to. Blink-182, like a lot of pop punk too. Never did I think that I had such a great time at a Garth Brooks show. That man is all hits, all boots, all hats, all hits. And what did you think of the show, Jim?
I mean, when you have so many songs in your arsenal yet to come that you can open your show with Friends in Low Places, I would say you've done all right. But I thought it was amazing. I'm not a huge country guy,
mm-hmm.
But all I've ever heard about Garth Brooks is what a phenomenal performer he is, and he certainly proved it that night in front of 400 people, which is crazy.
Jeez.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you said, I mean, he's doing stadiums otherwise, and
he's been doing stadiums for the last 20 plus years. We're talking sold out 11 nights here in Chicago at his last tour, and the fact that he's still riding true, it's incredible to see. Ashley, do you have a bucket list band that you need to see before you there we go. This is takes me back to that night that Jim and I were just standing in the front row of Garth Brooks.
It was amazing to me the empty buckets of beer littering the floor at Joe's that night.
Oh my gosh, so many. There were cardboard cutouts, people in only a few cowboy hats though. I saw it was a lot of
including Garth. Yeah,
because you needed to win these tickets through the country music radio stations here in Chicago. That's the only way you could get them.
That's one of my takeaways on him, is that he still, after all these years, cares that much about having a hit, because I mm-hmm. think that's what's really driving the whole Dive Bar thing. His new single is Dive Bar, and so he's partnering up with, he's essentially forcing radio stations throughout the country to play that song, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's going to give him a hit.
Hey, nobody said that Garth Brooks wasn't good at doing business. I mean, the fact that you can't find his music anywhere on YouTube, we were just listening to, I think, his
right.
brother playing his cover of his song. anywhere on YouTube,
he's got
anywhere
his own
on iTunes,
streaming service.
Own streaming service, all on Amazon. Mm-hmm. That's where you can find his music. It's incredible to see the amount of thought that goes into a great music artist these days. But Ashley, like we said, do you have a bucket list band that you need to see before they kick the bucket?
Before they kick the bucket. oh man, I mean, there are so many bands that you want to see. I actually got to see Seth MacFarlane. He's not a band.
Incredible singer and
I got
great
to see
classic
him,
music artist.
And honestly, I think that he was my bucket list person to see mm-hmm. before he passes, just because he's not old at all. He has a long way to go, but
he doesn't do a lot of the touring like that.
Yeah, he doesn't get to tour as often because he's always writing, for
right.
Family Guy or the Orville or whatever.
Ted.
So to actually get to see him perform and sing Frank Sinatra songs, Dean Martin songs. It was truly amazing. I really enjoy that style of music, and it was just interesting to see him doing something completely different than what we all know him from.
Sure.
So he was my bucket list person then. I can't really think of one now. Probably REO Speedwagon or mm-hmm. Chicago, or even Queen. I know it's not the same without Freddie Mercury, but they're still touring with Adam Lambert, and
they're coming soon, August 9th, I think.
Yeah.
And then to see Queen with Adam Lambert, I mean, just to see Brian May play those kind of solos,
old-school
solos, would be a dream in itself. We got some more texts rolling through. So many, I can't even read them. It's like a flood of texts here. from the Santa Barbara County Bowl, 1981, Joe Walsh is a concert that is from the 815. Jackson Brown actually came on stage at the same time to do a Beatles cover of Hey Jude.
I've never seen Jackson Brown. You can put him on my list.
Jackson Brown?
Absolutely.
There's so many great stories. Have you seen this Eagles documentary they talk about Jackson Brown and his songwriting ability and how he would just sit at his piano and write these songs over and over again? And that's actually how most of the Eagles learned how to play their songs.
Did he write Take It Easy? I think he wrote Take It Easy.
Did he?
He wrote one of the big early Eagles hits, yeah.
Man,
it was Take It Easy.
From the 630, Bruce Springsteen, they went on to see him at tour in 1985 at the height of his power at Soldier Field.
I really wish that he would come back around now and do a solo tour, because he's got the new solo album mm-hmm. out, but it sounds like he's holding off and he's going to tour again with the E Street Band. But I would love to see him solo. That I would put on my bucket list.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, how about this? From the 773, went backstage for Kiss. Two 16-year-old girls. We just stood there and giggled. never worried about safety, because it's back in the day, the
right.
concerts weren't the same. They were more friendly. They're open spaces. I mean, think about Woodstock's 1969. It was just open fences,
right.
and people could do what they wanted to. We were talking a little bit about that, but Jim, I let's dive back into today. You wrote this amazing article on Lollapalooza coming up.
Thank you.
All the great things that are going on. Now, I myself, one of my bands that I need to see before they kick the bucket. First, Dolly Parton, of
okay.
course. Got to see her. I've been to Willie Nelson's house twice. His
wow.
house. Never seen him perform.
How'd you swing that?
At South by Southwest. He owns the Luck. He hosts
okay.
the Luck Reunion Tour every single year to see Willie Nelson, perform. Just, I don't care that he talks through his songs. I don't care that he plays his guitar.
Nelson.
Yeah, his guitar is older than me. And
Trigger's yeah. amazing. There's a documentary about Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
The care he has, he pays somebody on a full time basis to essentially care for that guitar. I mean, obviously that guitar has a hole in it.
Massive hole. It's basically all hole in that guitar. But just seeing him perform would be amazing. But in terms of the early 2000s, when I was coming into my music foray, and my music self, the Strokes. I have seen that every single solo member in okay. their solo side projects, but never the full band.
Yeah, I've interviewed Albert Hammond, and I've seen him a couple of times, but I've never seen the Strokes, and they don't do a lot of this. But now this week, it sounds like too the news kind of leaked that there may be some new Strokes music coming as well. So
yeah, their business manager. Oh, I'm very very happy because it's been a while, and the thing is, no matter what the Strokes do, I'm into it because I love that chirpy guitar. I love the way that they flow with their melodies and their songs, and it's just like I don't give an S attitude with their music, and I think that it's really, really awesome what they do. So seeing them is going to be pretty amazing. What other great highlights are happening at Lollapalooza, though, this year, Jim?
I'm particularly excited about Sunday, quite frankly. Not even because of the headliners, by the way. As you get a little bit deeper on that bill on Sunday, you've got Janelle Monáe playing. She's amazing. And Slash. You can't go wrong with Slash performing at Guns N' Roses. But we've got quite a bit. I think what amazes me about Lollapalooza, and it's one way they stay true to the original, you know, spirit of the festival as a traveling entity throughout the 90s. Because people think about Lollapalooza as the alternative thing, but you had so much more going on. You had rap artists like A Tribe Called Quest or Ice Cube, and you had goth rockers like Sushi and the Banshees. You had, you know, all these different types of sounds. George Clinton, you know, in the 90s as part of that touring festival.
Mm-hmm.
And this year you've got a lot of different stuff, too. You've got, you know, the country of Casey Musgraves. You've got a rock guitarist like Slash.
Can
and
we
then
just
you've got
can
Ariana
just,
Grande?
Yeah. That's what Ashley wanted to see this year. But could you stop and talk about how great of a year Casey Musgraves has been?
It's amazing.
Having?
I mean, I think it's a great thing for music. I mean, she's such a wonderful songwriter and such a great presence. I mean,
well, speaking about Dolly Parton, you know, the fact that I wanted to see her before she passed away. Actually, I saw her at the Grammys. They did a big medley of her songs, but never just her. And Casey Musgraves, I feel like, is her reincarnate almost.
Okay.
Well, she's still alive, but you know what I mean.
Sure, that country with kind of the pop.
Country
she's,
pop.
She's going more and more pop, which is fine to me.
Mm-hmm. Great attitude, amazing, smooth, buttery voice, too. So she's one of my favorites that I would love to see. And she's playing the Metro here in Chicago.
What a great... I mean, the after shows every year, right? Metro is ground zero for the best ones. But Casey Musgraves at the Metro, that's pretty cool.
Her at the Metro, I think we have the Revivalist that I mentioned before at the Vic. Are there any ones that have been on your radar, Jim?
Gary Clark Jr. at the Metro.
Wow.
That's pretty wonderful. I saw him at House of Blues a couple of years ago when he did a Lollapalooza after show, and he's obviously particularly incendiary on the guitar. That in a small club like Metro is amazing. Death Cab for Cutie, I think they're doing Metro as well. That's a Thursday night show, so that'll be great. Sharon Van Etten,
ooh,
Lincoln Hall, Sunday night.
Man.
That's outstanding.
See, there are so many great things, and that's kind of like the secret part of Lollapalooza. The after shows, just like what you can do around the city. There's a lot of things that people come in, and they're like, oh, I don't want to go to Lollapalooza because it's too many people, it's too hot, it's too scary, there's going to be a zillion people. Oh, no, what do we do? Go to the after shows.
Go
after check
shows,
them out.
For sure.
And we're very lucky. You know what? We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with Ashley Byhun. She actually put together a survival list for this year's Lollapalooza. And
we
Jim,
need it.
We're going to give
don't
our
go.
We're going to
that's
we're,
the survival list.
No. We're going to make our listeners smarter by giving Ashley's survival list. So we're going to come back with that here on WGN Radio. Stay tuned. Welcome back to WGN's Nightside. This is your host, Mike Heidemann. Thank you guys so much for listening to WGN Radio. Ooh. That beautiful, beautiful voice you're hearing is Chicago's own Kevin Pollak, the song Man About Town. He's a good guy. You can see him all over the town. I think he plays with the Blues Brothers tribute band throughout Chicago. So check him out there. And this is his new song. We're diving back into all things music, all things Lollapalooza, all things Chicago here on WGN Radio. Jim, we were talking about how to survive these concerts.
And I mean,
you and I are getting kind of a little bit older, so I thought we could go to our youth expert on concerts, Ashley Byhun, our amazing producer. Ashley, you have a little bit of a survival list for Lollapalooza this year.
I do. I got a couple of do's and don'ts, trying to think of some things that I don't necessarily do or I do that I need to keep doing. So do drink a lot of water and wear sunscreen.
Very, very important.
It gets hot out there. You forget about it, and you sweat it away throughout the day, so just keep putting on sunscreen, keep drinking water, make sure you stay hydrated out there. And a don't would be for ladies, do not wear leather bags or pleather bags, because when you're in a pit of sort or you're all squished together, people behind you get stuck on them when you're all sweaty and gross, and then you're just, it's just not a fun time. So that's a don't on what I've noticed. Like, don't do that. Wear, a fabric bag.
Okay, so no leather bags, but what about the guys in tight leather pants? Does that work?
Yeah, don't do it.
It's not a poison concert, sure? Mike. It's Lollapalooza.
Darn it. Okay, what's step number two?
All right, so another do is be respectful to those around you. Obviously, they're all there to have a good time. Don't be pushing into people. Don't be thinking, it's my concert, it's my festival, I'm going to be doing what I want to do. Definitely go there, have some fun, but also be respectful to those around you.
It's amazing how frequently that one doesn't happen. But
yeah, you think that people would learn after all these things. It should be no tall people in the front, put down the cameras, and just, be kind to your fellow man.
Exactly. So a don't is don't privilege style over comfort. So ladies, don't be showing up in heels. I see a lot of girls show up in heels and they're on grass surfaces and you're just getting stuck. And sometimes...
Wait, do you help these women that are getting stuck with their stiletto heels in the mud?
Yeah, I mean, you just see it and you're like, what are you doing? And the ground's getting muddy and they're just miserable and their shoes are ruined. And it's like,
creating
why
divots.
Did you do this? Yeah, you just wanted the Instagram photo. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Okay.
Another do is buy your merch early. If you are going to buy merch, get it right when you get there, because by the end of the show, usually everyone's hyped and they're like, I'm going to go get my merch. I love this new band that I saw. So definitely go early. If you see the line short, hop in right there. And also, there's not always a line there, so if you can see a little opening, squeeze yourself in, get your shirt, and get out.
This is where I conflict with you, because I feel like I should get my merch at the end, because I don't want to carry it around.
I don't want to carry it.
That's a good point. That is a good point, but sometimes you can go change,
Well,
put it over
point.
Your shirt, but then you're wearing
limited edition
layer.
Items that are all the rage now at these concerts, if it's a poster or something, if you wait till the end of the day, you're probably not going to get it. So there's that, too.
That's a good point. And what about when I have my leather pants and they have like shorts on and it's like 90 degrees? I might need to switch them at the same time. All right. How about the next one?
Don't forget cash.
Okay.
Yeah. They have card stations and all that jazz, but don't forget cash. It's easier and simpler. And also, if I were you, I would put cash in different pockets on your body and different bags in your sock, just in case things happen. You lose stuff, you drop things.
Nothing better than paying for a beer with a good old sweaty sock dollar.
There you go.
You got any more?
Don't wing it. If you're going to a festival and you're having fun with your friends, I understand you want to be spontaneous and you never know what's going to happen, but also someone have a plan, because if you miss the band you want to try to get to because you were too busy seeing another band that you weren't exactly trying to see, have somewhat of a plan and have fun.
Wow. All right, Ashley, thank you so much for your tips. That was really, really helpful. I think we're ready to take on Lollapalooza, Jim.
I think so. The plan is key. She's right, because you're going to have horrible phone reception. So the plan is key.
Oh, that's the worst part, when you want to Instagram something and it's like, oh, I only got one bar. What's going on here? Come on, Perry Farrell. Pay for some extra service. All right, let's dive back into the break here real quick. We got the news coming up with Roger. So much more happening on WGN Radio. We have Cameron Crowe coming up as well, so stay tuned. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to WGN's Nightside. That soothing, soothing beat you're hearing is from our good friend Southside Jake, a favorite of John Hanson's and Jess Raines. And Ashley, you're a fan of his as well, huh?
Yeah, he's awesome. This is actually one of his new songs, so I'm really excited. He actually had a show today at the House of Blues, so that's what made me think of it. I was like, he'd be awesome to play.
Man, grooving on the Southside Jake, another Chicago artist. We're going to be playing Chicago artists throughout the night, and I'm going to be posting these online. You can follow me at Michael Heidemann on Facebook. I'm going to be posting links to all these songs as well and these artists too, so follow me there. And you can follow me on Instagram as well at Arthur Fonzarelli. Yes, like the Fonz. or at Sound Sessions Podcast on Instagram, and you can find me there. Jim Ryan, Forbes journalist, music extraordinaire, the greatest mind in the biz. Where can we find your stuff?
Everything's on Twitter, at Radio Jim Ryan. Everything's on Facebook as well. And then Forbes.com/Jim Ryan 1. If you search Forbes Jim Ryan, you'll find all of that. Chicago Now, Tribune Company's blog site. There's a bunch there. And the Daily Herald newspaper.
Jeez.
There you go. Staying busy.
That is amazing. I mean, you're all over the place. So, total pleasure to have you on the show tonight. And we're talking about where we can find each other. If you're looking for me on a Saturday night, though, I do host this great, great open mic in Chicago's River North, right in the heart of downtown on State and Hubbard. That's right across from the House of Blues every single Saturday. Jim, I have not seen you there yet, though. You've not performed on stage. What are you waiting for?
It's gonna be soon.
Okay.
I'm coming by. I'll come sing.
Okay, I feel you on that, but we want
to sing.
Oh, can you?
Oh, yeah.
On this show, we make people sing. Roger has sung many, many Neil Diamond songs before.
Wow.
That's why he's not in the room at the moment. But, you know, we're talking.
You have to pay to see something like that. Amazing.
On here, it's free. That's the power of WGN. That is
the beauty of it.
But we're talking about open mics now. I mean, so I host this open mic at Bill's Bar and Burger. It's a great, great spot. Lots of positivity flowing throughout the evening. And if you know an open mic, or if you're an open micer yourself, you should come out. It's every Saturday, 9 to midnight. And on the phone with us, we have Aaron Torricelli, the man behind the sound, the manager of Bill's Bar and Burger. What's going on, Aaron? Good to hear from you.
Mr. Heidemann, it is great to hear from you. How are you tonight?
I am fantastic. So you run the story and the store over at Bill's. You have a lot of music going on there now. What was the thinking behind, you know, creating these great music nights for Chicago?
I have to give you some of the credit. It was certainly a collaboration. I'm thankful that you started coming into the restaurant and you liked it, and we have this great space. And we have a piano and a microphone, and, you know, you asked me if you could start playing music, and I was happy to have you. And then it sort of just morphed into this great open mic, and it's been really cool. You know, we've just had a ton of people come out for it. We've been doing a contest every week. We had sort of a playoff, if you will, a championship a couple of weeks ago, and that person's going to get a showcase. So it's just been... it's just been really cool. It's taken on a life of its own. But, you know, you certainly owed as much credit as me.
Aaron, you're being too kind. So basically I went in there and I said, hey, do you guys need a guitar player? And they're like, I guess. And I just stopped. I went there every single week until they kicked me out, basically.
It was happenstance.
Yeah, it was happenstance. But Aaron, he's so great to work with, and he has a great, great creative background as well. Aaron, your background is very interesting because you were in film for a little bit, too. Does this kind of lead it to, you know, maybe your the essence of just loving this music and creating more of a creative atmosphere at your restaurant?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's restaurants are sort of a production no matter what. Every single night is a sort of a show, and, you know, it's never the same twice. So it has a little bit of a, you know, similarity to live theater or live music in the sense that, you know, the guests are like the audience, and the cooks and the waiters are sort of like a cast, you know, and as a manager, you're just trying to keep everybody moving in the same direction and keep the show going, and hopefully people like it. So, you know, it just lends itself to that. And being down in River North and, you know, being in that environment, you know, it's only natural that we have live music. And just, you know, it lends itself to the kind of fun atmosphere of Bill's Barn Burger that we generally like to have.
Yeah, and, you know, ever since we created the open mic together, it happens again every single Saturday night from 9 until midnight. It's open to all walks of life. We've had everybody from a guy with an organ to a guy who does guitar techno music, I guess you could say, with light-up glasses, to shout-out DJ iDays. I think he's probably listening right now, Aaron. but everything underneath the sun is shown at this great, great spot in Chicago. We have a great window out to the street. You can hear the music on the street. It's a beautiful thing. But not only Saturday night, there's some other nights that happen over at Bill's as well, correct?
Yeah, well, we're trying to build it up so that we have something going on every night of the week, and we're up to three nights so far. So on Thursdays, we have comedy at 5:30, and we've teamed up with Team Us Comedy, a couple guys, great guys, Tyler and Vic, that run that, and they've helped me start an open mic for comics at 5:30 every week on Thursday, and it's been a great turnout so far. The first week we had about 10, the second week we had about 20, and this past week I think there were over 20 comics that came out and did their bits. And you know, we keep it PG because it is 5:30 in the evening, but people have really gotten into that. And then on Friday nights we do live music, so a professional player comes and plays the piano and sings all sorts of different pop songs and covers and things like that from 7 to 11. So that was tonight. We had a great player come out. And we do have an Instagram that people can follow. It's called Live at Bill's Bar Chicago. So just all run together, Live at Bill's Bar Chicago. You can go on Instagram and see the open mic act and see the live music and check it out and get ready to join yourself.
Aaron, we obviously see open mics across the city. What is it that, you know, makes a great open mic stand out? Like, what's the necessary component there?
Well, I think the first thing, and I'm going to go ahead and toot your horn again, is a great host, and you're certainly that, somebody that's enthusiastic. And then I think, you know, the people that come to it make it, you know. It doesn't have to be, you know, the most talented people in the world, but people that are enthusiastic and stay and watch the other act and, you know, kind of just enjoy the conviviality, the networking opportunity that might present itself, or you know, just a chance to share music with people of a like mind. I think is what open mic is all about, and it's certainly not about you know, being like I said, the most polished thing in the world. But you know, as our open mic often does, it can turn into a somewhat of a drunken thing along, or there can be some really insane kind of great moments. I mean, we've had some great people. The guy Paul of the Bannerman, just like that guy's got an unbelievable voice, you know. And I mean, there's been some times where, you know, the whole place, you know, maybe 50-75, I think there's been 100 people in there watching, are just captivated by somebody, you know, kind of really bearing their soul for everybody to see. And that's what's cool about it. So it's definitely always an adventure. There's some strange people. Shout out to the guy that came with his accordion, who we really want him to come back. There was sort of a magical character that was kind of like this hipster steampunk, like apothecary man.
Wow.
With an accordion that came. Dill Elner, if you're listening, please come back. Bill, because you, sir, brought the magic, and we need that accordion magic again.
It was a very magical evening when he came by. So I love that we're using our platform to call out Dill Elner to come back to the open mic. And shout out, Dill, because actually he is very talented. Aaron, I'm gonna toss you over for a question from Forbes music journalist Jim Ryan.
Actually, I have a question for you, Mike.
Oh, okay.
Mike, if we pick a song, will you learn it on guitar so I could come to Bill's and sing it?
Oh, can we do that? Aaron knows this better than anybody. Basically, any song that anyone requests, as long as they're there and they'll stick around, I will play for them. Whether it be good or bad,
great.
Mostly
right, then
bad.
Then we're doing this. This is happening.
And we have the ability to, you know, kind of have it be almost a karaoke type of situation if need be. A lot of people, you know, go that route as well, and we don't judge.
All right, then I'm going to come in and do a very mediocre version of Cheap Trick.
I'd love to see that, Jim. Well, you know, Aaron, we don't judge. We keep it very positive, but we do a mm-hmm. little bit of judging for the contest that we're having throughout the next 6 weeks. We have great music artists that come through, and then they all battle it out at the end with a few other open micers laced in between for a great cash, not a cash prize, but a good gift card prize from Bill's and the chance to mm-hmm. play a showcase at Bill's. And it's an amazing spot. Go and check it out, 30 East Hubbard. Aaron, Aaron Torricelli. He has this great podcast out. It's Da Bears Podcast. Am I saying that right, Aaron?
It's called The Tailgate Show.
The Tailgate
actually.
Show. The
yeah,
Tailgate
yep.
Show.
Yeah, that's I get on with some guys who are Bears fanatics like me, and we We talk about our beloved.
Where can we find that?
You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Podbean. You can find it on YouTube. The Tailgate Show.
The Tailgate Show. Check it out. And check out Live at Bill's Bar Chicago on the Instagram. And if you want to see Aaron in person and come out to the open mic, come out to Bill's every single Saturday from 9 to midnight. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us here on WGN.
Thank you, man. Thank you for everything. Have a great night.
I will see you tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
All right, let's keep moving on with the show. That was a lot of fun. Jim, have you ever done an open mic? Have you done karaoke?
I've done karaoke. Okay. Oh, yeah. I've done lots and lots of karaoke.
What's your go-to karaoke
Axl
song?
Axl Rose.
Anything Axl Rose?
Okay. Welcome to the Jungle.
Okay.
Yeah. Welcome to the Jungle. Cheap Trick. I'll rock out some Cheap Trick.
That has like the longest intro and the longest guitar solo in history, and that's the song you play?
Oh, yeah. But I can scream like Axl, so it's...
Really?
Yeah.
Can we hear a little sample?
You're not going to get it right now, no.
Okay.
You don't do Axl Rose a cappella. You know, you just don't.
You know, it's funny because he mentioned Paul of the Bannermen, and when he won last week's contest, he does this great visceral scream that comes almost from like the jungle itself. And we said, if you're going to win the prize, you need to do the scream one more time. And everyone was like dead silent. And he did the scream and everyone went crazy.
What did he sing?
He sang two original songs, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, he's an amazing artist from the Bannermen. So go and check them out. Another great Chicago band. And that's the cool thing. When you're at an open mic, you just can let loose, and it's such great therapy as a person in general, because you're working all week, and then you get on stage, and you're like somebody else.
Right.
You become like somebody else. Ashley, I wanted to know, do you have a go-to karaoke song, or is there a certain kind of vibe that you kind of create when you're out and singing?
Yes, I do any ABBA song possible.
Wow, ABBA.
All
right.
That's my go-to jam.
Wow. We have a dancing queen.
Yeah, but I don't do Dancing Queen because it's too predictable.
Yeah, you gotta give them a few curveballs when you're on stage.
Yeah, ABBA's the way to go. It's a safety songs.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that is a good one. You know what I used to do when I was doing karaoke? I saw this one guy, and he blew away an audience, and it stuck with me for years. I did ELO's Telephone Line for like the last 10 years. It's the saddest song, but when they get into the shoe bops, everyone turns around and is like, oh yeah, I really like this song. Not really a crowd pleaser though, so maybe I should pick a different song.
Just don't close with it. You'll be fine.
Hey, if you have any open mic memories, if you're an open mic performer, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you can showcase your stuff at Bill's. Maybe you've been all around the city. Chicago is known for its great music, and we want to hear those memories. Call in, text in 312-981-7200. We have a great interview with Cameron Crowe coming up right after the news, which is happening in about 10 minutes or so. So stay tuned. We'll be back here on WGN's Nightside. This is Mike, Jim, Ashley, and so much more coming up right after this. Welcome back to Radio Disney. It's great to... WGN Radio. It's great to hear you. Ashley, what band is this? This is a Chicago-based band, huh?
Yes, this is the band The Resolution. This is their song Nothing on Us. And they were... So I went to Downers Grove North High School. Mm-hmm. These guys went to Downers Grove South High School.
Oh,
and
wow.
They were like the hottest thing in our hometown when they first became a band. So this was actually their first song they ever made. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's pretty awesome. Wait, yeah. Did you play music back in high school, Ashley?
I was in choir in high school, and I tried to self-teach myself the piano, and I'm still working on it, and I can figure out some things, and I can pluck out Don't Stop Believin', but other than that, I've tried to learn the guitar, I've given up because I'm lazy. I wanted to play the drums when I was a kid, and I just, you know, I had a kit, and I would play, and I thought I sounded great, but it's like, I got lazy. I just have to not be lazy, and... put the effort in.
Yeah, I feel you on that. So actually, Ashley, you would join me on one of my podcasts. I do a podcast called Two Dudes, One Disc, where we dive into the classic albums from throughout the world, throughout the years. And what album did you pick?
I picked the self-titled album, Sugar Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fun time. We had a good time.
A blast.
We went all over the place with that one, but it was fun.
Yeah, it was. You know, I never thought I'd be spending like an hour 15 minutes talking about Sugar Ray.
I know,
but I had a really good time.
We went all over the map. We talked about Scooby-Doo. We talked about other bands.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
So if you want to listen to that podcast and so much more, you can go to WGNradio.com and search Two Dudes, One Disc, or you can go to my Facebook page at Sound Sessions Podcast and find the video of Ashley and I, and we had some great comments. Actually, I think that's one of our most viewed videos yet because Ashley has this fan base that's built around her.
Yeah, it's my mom. That's all my mom's friends on Facebook.
That's amazing. I love it, but I love learning about people and what their albums are, because you think that you see people, I mean, especially with working with somebody every single day or being, you know, friends with somebody, but then you don't really know them, I guess, in the same conversational sense until you know their favorite kinds of music. I mean, for some reason, there's something that dives a little bit deeper, and getting to talk to you about your favorite album and what it means to you and the memories it shares, I mean, you really get to find out about a person, and it's funny because it's just sounds we're listening to. You're just listening to your favorite sounds, and then for some reason, it sparks your memory almost more than smell does.
It's so wild.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. You really do learn a lot about somebody by the music that they listen to, because if you have similar music taste, you generally bond easier.
Yeah.
So it's all interesting how music can really bring together people that way.
Absolutely. And when you go to a concert too, I'm finding that going to a as I get older, and texters text in and tell me if you agree or not, 312-981-7200, going to a concert alone actually makes you feel quite good, because you're able to, you know, find like-minded people, and you're all there for the same reason too, right, Jim?
It took me a while to get there, but mm-hmm. Yes, now I'm there, because yeah, you and I we wind up at a lot of concerts by ourselves. It's to the point now. It's,
no, that sounds kind of sad, actually.
But that's not how I mean it. Like reviewing, you're not, you know, you're there, you're working, mm-hmm. you're not bringing the gang with.
Mm-hmm.
What I find now is it's to the point where when I do the odd time I have a plus one and I'm going to bring a guest, I have to put a lot of thought into it, because I'm like, I can't bring somebody who's just going to annoy me the whole time, who's mm-hmm. going to talk through it, who's going to look at their phone for, you know, 45 minutes straight. So yeah, I'm with you. Like you can really get into the concert experience a bit more when you're
yeah.
flying solo.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because you got to find the right kind of concert buddy. What kind
right.
of concert buddy am I going to go
it's
with?
Got to be a good hang.
Got to be a good hang. You can't be talking too much. Yeah. I don't want to hear about right. like your day
Correct.
Through a song. I don't want you looking at me during when I'm trying to enjoy my song.
Wow.
Well, not in a way
like that.
It's no, I'm just saying, like, when we're like looking like you're wanting to talk. Like
sure.
I want to focus on the show.
Understood.
And when, you know, people, like, we saw Reverend Horton Heat together.
Yeah, we did.
And seeing that show, when Reverend is up on stage with, like, slapping a bass solo and he's playing the guitar and doing an awesome riff, you don't want to be, like, talking about, oh, so what'd you get in math class today or something?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't
Save it for the water cooler.
Save it for the water cooler. But that's what brings me to this next article that I noticed online from Vice.com. Science says that regularly attending concerts actually makes you happier.
Yeah. I believe that.
Absolutely.
100%.
I mean, the study, it's an Australian study serving around 1,000 people, have concluded that people are happier with their lives if they do go to these shows. And why is this? Because there's a connection between the habitual music engagement subjects' well-being. This engagement just kind of gets into your blood, and it's so much more. When you're hearing your favorite song, there's something that goes on with your body. You get the tingles. You see, there's so much visual stimulation. That's why music has been around for years and years and years, because it brings people together.
Well, and it's a stress-free experience, too. I mean, what are you mm-hmm. what are you trying? When music largely is a form of escape, right? You go to a concert, you're not thinking about work. You're not thinking about what's been bothering you all day mm-hmm. long. So you go there, and it's a stress-free experience. I think we need more of that in our life. So yeah, absolutely, I see that as a...
What's the best concert you've ever been to, Jim?
Ever? I hate when I get asked that question, because I never have an answer ready. I the first time I saw Buddy Guy, I thought was pretty mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. I hadn't been exposed to a ton of blues music at that point. And this was at his old club, too. This mm-hmm. was down the street on Balboa from where he's at now. So, I mean, little tiny place, and he's up on the bar, you know, kicking drinks over as he's doing a solo. I mean, to say it was an intimate experience was
that's pretty
was
awesome.
Something else. It was, yeah, it was nuts.
Yeah, anytime that the artist kind of gets just the genuineness shown through, to see Buddy Guy kick over beer cans is pretty darn awesome.
And at 83, he's still doing it, which is mind-blowing every year.
Wow. Hey, Ashley, what's like your ultimate concert experience? Like, what is your favorite concert?
My favorite concert that I ever went to was actually Moody Blues.
Wow.
Over at Ravinia. Yeah. And that was so insane because I grew up listening to Moody Blues because my mom was a huge Moody Blues fan. I have 3 of their CDs in one of those CD cases in my room. So actually going to see them and hear them live and in person was unbelievable. And the crowd there was just, they were all in, and it was just a wonderful experience.
Man. Ashley's an old soul.
She is.
Yeah, I am an old soul. That's a great way of putting it. I always say that I am a 22-year-old I'm a 60-year-old woman trapped in a 22-year-old body.
The Moody Blues. I was not expecting that one. That's
amazing. No, that kind of came. I'm still kind of jarred from it because you said you wanted to see Ariana Grande earlier, but Ariana Grande, she has like a great, great old school voice too. So okay, it all makes sense, Ashley. I'm back on your page. Hey, Roger, what about you? Favorite concert experience?
Oh, man. There were a bunch I went to when I was in college. Seals and Croft.
Wow.
I saw them perform at Illinois State University. I saw Chase at SIU Carbondale. I also saw, I can't remember, and I should. That's what happens when you get older, too. You start forgetting things.
Gordon Lightfoot.
No, I saw actually a pretty wild jazz fusion performance by Johnny Carson's band leader.
Doc?
Doc Severn.
Wow.
Yeah. And he came in full band and blew the place away. I would have to say probably the best one was Alpine Valley. Our daughter was about maybe 6 or so, and it was a rainy day. I'd never been to Alpine Valley before for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought our daughter because Huey Lewis and the News was playing, and we just loved his music. And it had been raining, and before the band came on, there was a hill that goes down to the stage. We were way back by the concessions, and people were body surfing down the hill because it was so muddy. And they were doing that all the way up until the concert. And I had her on my shoulders through the entire concert. That was a marvelous experience. She loved it.
Rod, see, that's
pretty good.
That's touching right there. I like that. I like that a lot. All right, we're about to go to your news, Roger. We have a quick break to take, but I wanted to take Kevin's call. You got a go-to karaoke song, huh, Kevin? What's up, man? Welcome to Sound Sessions and WGN Radio.
Yep. I do. This is Kevin Pollock, by the way.
Oh,
how you
Kevin.
Doing, man?
Hey, we just played your song on air.
Oh, sweet. No, I just finished up a show. Sorry about that.
Well, what's going on? What's your go-to karaoke song?
My go-to karaoke song is Joe Cocker with A Little Help from My Friends.
Oh, come on.
It's pretty good.
You can
That's
really
a tough one to do,
it.
Though, man.
Huh?
That's a tough one to do, though.
Yeah, but it's just like, I love singing Cocker. And, you know, it's everybody will sing, you know, a pop song or a classic rock song at karaoke or show tunes or jazz or whatnot. But when you do that song, it, like, stops a room. Mm-hmm. And just everybody's invested, and it's like it's one of those songs that just, you know, I know Ringo, you know, started with it, but Joe Cocker is just is one of those entities that you can't mess with, and I have fun doing that song every single time.
Kevin,
and it's just like
You're an amazing singer. You got that great song. Can you give us a little bit of Joe Cocker on air here at WGN?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay. What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh.
Through a phone.
Wow. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us. And I knew you were going to blow it away. See, you give the guy a chance, and he just blows us all away. Great job, man.
Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks for joining us on WGN. We're going to get to the news really quick right after this break here on WGN Radio.
Hey, this is Cameron Crowe, and you're listening to Sound Sessions.
Take taking Sundance by storm, David Crosby, Remember My Name, directed by A.J. Eaton, threads the strangely beautiful life of the living legend David Crosby. Famous for creating sounds in such bands like The Byrds, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. Our guest today is author, director, Rolling Stones journalist and editor, but most importantly, music lover, Cameron Crowe. Cameron, it's great to talk with you today.
Great to talk with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing so well. As I said before we jumped into the interview, congrats on the film and everything. It's truly an exciting journey to walk through David Crosby's life for a few minutes.
It's definitely an adventure. I love music, as you say, but there's just something about a character that's so big and so kind of classic in the way he tells a story and, you know, tells you some truths about a very checkered life.
Mm-hmm.
That you just love. You love it, you know? Because there are very few people that you'll ever meet in your life like David Crosby. And you definitely meet him in this movie.
You know, the movie starts with him talking about living in Chicago. We're based here in Chicago. And so as legend goes, and a lot of people who follow David Crosby's career know, he liked to partake in the marijuana plant every once in a while. And he went through this amazing, visceral moment with music when someone kicks open this door to see him and just starts playing a solo on the saxophone. And I'm not giving too much away, but it just blew me away.
No.
What was your first visceral moment with music that you thought, wow, you know, this is something I can make a career out of?
Well, it's kind of in Almost Famous, the movie that I wrote, directed, kind of about like how I first got started in music journalism.
If you're going to be a true journalist, you know, a rock journalist, you first should never get paid much, but you will get free records from the record company.
And it was essentially that I loved music so much, I just, you know, I sought out my heroes. I sought out Lester Bangs, who was my favorite rock journalist. He was from my hometown. He came home for Christmas, and I found him and pounced on him and said, I want to do this. He gave me an assignment to write about Humble Pie, the band Humble Pie.
Mm-hmm.
And I went backstage and got kicked out and got back in and found my way to the bands and basically been interviewing people ever since. But you rarely run into somebody like David Crosby, you know, who you just ask him one question. And he's telling you his deepest, darkest, most painful and hilarious secrets. You just like, you never forget a guy like that. And I would write about him over the years, but then when I ran into him later, and he said he wanted to do a documentary, it was like, well, you know, I gotta at least do the interviews for this. And then, of course, we started that journey, and it became something that I was really invested in. I worked a lot with AJ, and it was a very communal experience making the movie, very personal and as intimate as our subject is.
Yeah, I noticed that in the film. The my favorite part was how natural a storyteller David actually was. And I was wondering, with your background in journalism, these musicians you speak to and all these other artists and individuals that you've met over the years, how do you get them to be so comfortable around you so quickly? What strategies do you use as a journalist?
They tend to be very sensitive and observant people, and they're in the public eye, so they're kind of good at figuring out who's full of crap, who's not, who wants something, mm-hmm. and who doesn't. And my very natural agenda was I'm a fan. I am lucky enough to be the representative of all the people, you know, in that arena, you know, at a show for the band they love. But I got a front row seat. Somehow I was able to have a front row seat, so I'm going to represent them. I'm not going to go in there and work out my own personal, you know, this is a story about me loving you. No, this is a story about you, Deep Purple, Jethro Tull, Journey, you know, just... If you love that band and you ask them questions that show that you love their stuff or at least know the stuff, they start to open up. And the best thing is when it becomes a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best. And really early on, we used to watch this interviewer, Dick Cavett.
The Dick Cavett Show.
Who, in fact, is in the Crosby film.
Mm-hmm.
He interviews Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Jefferson Airplane and Joni Mitchell and stuff at night of Woodstock. And, you know, he's just such a great interviewer. And I remember seeing that as a little kid when we were watching it. But Dick Cavett's thing was conversational, you know? Just like he would have people like Marlon Brando on his show. And he'd be like, "Hey, Marlon. So what you eat today?" You love it because immediately you're just like in the living room with these people talking about real stuff. It's great.
Yeah, it's truly awesome. And, you know, for somebody who came up to and learned about journalism through people like you, I mean, it's cool to see your progress and how you are able to have these people open up. And it's funny you mentioned Dick Cavett, because I'm a huge Dick Cavett fan. And myself, kind of model my journalism and my interviews after him. And I got to speak with him at South by Southwest.
Fantastic.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I spoke with him at South by Southwest two years ago. And speaking with Dick Cavett, the thing that really opened up the conversation was talking about all the good times that he had at this summer house that he had built. And I was like, this is the thread that I want to pull, because getting people to open up, you know, about things that they're kind of, I guess, tired of talking about if they're on a junction or a junket or something like that is truly it's a great thing. I mean, most of my favorite conversations come from somebody's over a cup of coffee.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And you know what? Making a movie, It's those are the best conversations that you have with your actors too, where it's just not like, "I want this. Really? What else do you want?" It's like, no, just let's have coffee and talk about like how much fun it'll be to get things right.
Yeah.
It's just always better when it's conversation between people.
When you would interview these bands, did you open up with just straight into the interview kind of questions, or did you kind of ease into it with, like Dick Cavett style, "What did you eat today?"
You know, it depends. It's everything you already do naturally. It's mm-hmm. just being open to whatever the situation is. And, you know, like you and me talking about, you know, today and how it's feeling, whatever, it just automatically you get a sense of who the people are who are talking, you and them,
mm-hmm.
and it starts being fun. Sometimes, if there's somebody you're interviewing that has, you know, a trauma mm-hmm. or something that you're going to have to get to, obviously you don't open with that. You talk about what the latest thing is and you ease into it.
Yeah, yeah. And
Matt Damon once said something like on a junket, he knew the movie was in trouble if there was one or two questions about the current project and then everything else was about body of work stuff.
Mm-hmm.
similarly, you know, it's always good to talk about what the latest project is mm-hmm. before you get into the past.
Yeah.
And sometimes the latest project is exactly what you want to talk about. Like this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's true. But I love this film because I'm a huge music guy myself. And, you know, you're seeing all the new movie, David Crosby, Remember My Name. But you see all these other biopics that are coming out now with the Elton John, the Bohemian Rhapsody. Would you yourself, I mean, you have such a great music background and music mind. Would you ever want to take one of these on, and who would it be besides David?
Oh, Joni Mitchell. Marvin Gaye really is the big one.
Oh, that'd be a great story.
Make a film about Marvin Gaye for a long time, and I've actually written a script. So if my time ever comes on that, I'm ready. But yeah, I mean, basically, I love a movie. I love Rocket Man. I thought Rocket Man was a brilliant kind of expression of Elton John's music, and I like when a film about an artist makes you feel like the music or the art or the painting of the artist that it's about. You know, it's like if you want to see a film about, you know, Amy Winehouse,
mm-hmm.
let me feel like that Amy Winehouse music makes me feel. That's mm-hmm. why I'm watching it. So I love that. Like, when one of those movies is able to catch the spirit of the band, it doesn't have to be Citizen Kane, but if it gives you the feeling of that artist on that level, I think Bohemian Rhapsody was incredibly successful. You know, it really made you feel like a Queen record.
Yeah.
And Elton John, even more so.
Man, it's so cool that they're finally making these kind of movies again. Because I love just learning about the artists that I live, the people behind the sounds and the albums, and it's amazing.
Totally.
Speaking on that, you know, taking
Tom Petty too. By the way, I would make a movie about Tom Petty.
Absolutely. Oh, could you imagine that story?
So let's get to the point. Let's roll. Another joint, let's
hear. Tom Petty, one of his last shows was here in Chicago at Wrigley Field. What an amazing artist.
Man.
You know, are you still going to shows and checking out bands these days?
Sure.
What are some of the most recent shows that you've been to, and what kind of bands are in Cameron Crowe's world at the moment?
I saw Promise of the Real the other day at the Troubadour, and they were incredible. They're just such a great, great band.
Wow.
Saw Brandi Carlile, love her.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's fun going to shows. And, you know, the sad part of it is the streaming doesn't pay the artists a lot, but the good part of it is you can see them playing a lot, because that's how most of them survive now. So people have really honed their performing skills. And, you know, it's really good to go to clubs and see these artists and support them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also good to buy the music.
Yeah.
Whenever possible.
Do you listen to music
on
your...
Crosby will tell you. He's like, streaming doesn't pay. Streaming doesn't pay. Do you want to work for a month and get a nickel? That's what I do. You know?
I loved how real David Crosby is, because, you know, I only knew this story, but to see him talk the way that I pictured it was just a cool experience. So let's dive back into the movie. So, you know, taking on such these monolithic characters that you've had, you know, Jeff Spicoli, Jerry Maguire, William Miller, and now David Crosby. Is there a
it's so funny the way you say it.
Is there a through line that kind of links all these characters together for you?
When you say it, I feel like David Crosby is definitely the through line to Jeff Spicoli. he's the Don Corleone of Spicoli. He's like,
I love that.
he is the king from which all stoners come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's so funny. I love writing a character that just kind of speaks for themselves. You know, writing a character like Spicoli was based on a real guy, but a lot of them are based on real people.
Mm-hmm.
His real life is definitely the most creative collaborator.
Yeah.
Real life has the best, most bizarre ideas.
It's true when they say you can't make that stuff up.
You know? You often cannot make that stuff up, or you can make it up and then real life does it better. It just happens all the time. And what's great is to, I don't know, I feel like I'm always a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always just kind of, you know, looking at life, and I just feel lucky enough to have a job where I can tell stories.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And everyone should go and check out David Crosby, Remember My Name. Now, he did open the movie talking about a story from Chicago. Do you have any good stories from the city of Chicago?
You know, I have good stories from Chicago. The movie Say Anything with John Cusack probably would not exist, you know, or definitely wouldn't exist in the same way without Chicago. We could not find the guy to play Lloyd Dobler in that movie. And I always loved John Cusack. I had heard he didn't want to do any more movies where he played a teenager, but he was willing to meet with me. And so I flew to Chicago, and he was sitting in this coffee shop near where he lived. He was turned away from me. He had a big leather jacket on. He had a scarf around his head. Even turned away from me, I knew he was the guy. That's the guy. Cusack's a big guy. I didn't know that. And the character is a kickboxer, right? So I'm looking at him, and he turns, and then I really knew he was the guy. He didn't want to do the movie at first. but I was never going to give up. He was the guy. So we just spent time together there, getting to know each other. We're kind of like dancing around whether he would do the movie. And he took me to all of his friends' houses. And they were playing Public Enemy for the first time. I was hearing like that stuff.
Yeah.
And we were playing Replacements and Clash. And I just like thought, Chicago, this is the best city in the world.